Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody, coast to coast, This Week in America. The Wonder of Life by John Durbin Husher discusses life on Earth from its beginning with the objective of finding out how life has started. It discusses wars and the many changes on Earth and how man takes a foothold on Earth's history, continuously searching for how life is initiated. This is the story of medical learning of man, bringing the reader right up to the present, past DNA to the discovery of how life begins, the crude beginning of DNA and the present work on stem cells, and learning that leads us to present-day knowledge of the human genome, an exciting story told in a novel way for the layman to understand. John Durbin Husher received a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering from the University of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in 1958. Invented and processed the first silicon single-chip integrated circuit in the world in 1959. Provided Wright-Patterson with a 30-megacycle single silicon chip device for its satellites. And in 1961, provided MIT, Massachusetts with the first single-chip silicon digital circuits. Retired in 2002 at the age of 70, John began to write books in 2005, has written 11, including The Wonder of Life, Foul Man's Ignorance on the Secrets of Life to the Marvels of Today's DNA, The Genetic Code, and The Genome of Man. And acclaimed author John Durbin Husher, our guest on This Week in America. John, welcome to the program, sir. It's great to have you with us.
I'm ready to talk.
Well, and I'm ready to ask questions. This is going to be a fascinating conversation. You take us way back when a lot of these questions began to find out where life begins, how it begins. Let's jump into it right away. What was the reason for how life begins discovered? How did that all come about?
Well, it turns out that the first 20 pages of my book talks about how Earth became the Earth we know today. It got its centrifugal force, it got its oxygen. It turns out it started out with their atmosphere with carbon dioxide. But as time went on, there was rain, there was water, there was oceans, and then plants started to grow. And when the plants started to grow, they give off oxygen and they take in carbon dioxide. Because of that, over hundreds of years, the atmosphere for Earth was converted from carbon dioxide to generally the oxygen dense atmosphere we know today. So that gives you everything ready for the man to take on. Well, man started several hundred million years ago with nothing. And then just several thousand years ago, man started to look around and find out what causes life. How's life generated?
Yes.
And it just went on for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years trying to figure out how life gets started. But one of the problems at that time, and all through the ages up till just a couple hundred years ago, there was no common language. Things that were found were written in Latin. There were no copying machines, no printings or anything. So even if you wrote something that you discovered, it was in Latin, and it didn't go anywhere because nobody could read Latin. Well, that kept being a problem until all the countries, really around 1400, decided, these are countries, not including North America and South America, decided they needed a common alphabet. So they worked together and they came up with a 26 or 27-letter alphabet that now allowed the people in their countries, when they found something, they wrote it down, it would be in their language so somebody else could read it. Well, also, there were no copying machines up to that point. And then in around 1430, this German Gutenberg discovered the printing press. With the printing press, when anybody wrote something in France or Spain or Germany, it could be copied rapidly and sent around the world that we knew at that time. It's this kind of discoveries that this book writes about. Little things here, little things there that helped get it going.
You know, in told in a way...
Around 1650, Leeuwenhoek, a Dutchman, generated the printing press. No, I'm sorry, he didn't. The microscope.
Oh,
so
okay,
now
yes.
We had the printing press. Now we had the microscope. Now we had a common alphabet. And the book talks about those things and carries them forward. And things now got carried forward rather rapidly in 1500, 1600, 1700, 1900, blah, blah, blah. Different people wrote theses or trades, theory of evolution, various things, but still nobody knew what causes life. And so there was a continuation of how do we find what discovers life? How does it begin? Well, interesting enough, in around 1920, 1930, some medical discoveries were made in France. How to rid people that were dying from bedside fever. The problem was he didn't want the other countries to take benefits and get paid for them. So he kept it sort of secret. Well, eventually, an American, Collenbrook, was able to get some copies of this medical achievement. So he had rats that he could put disease in, and he decided what he was going to do is take three boxes. He'd have these rats, 12 of them in one box, 12 of them in another box, and then he said, oh, wait a minute. I still have three or four more that I have to do, and he put those in a separate box. Well, the first two boxes, the medicine was put into one of them, but not the other one. Sure enough, as he did that, he realized, I don't have enough of that medicine to put in with the four in that third box. So he looked around, and there was some sulfanamide there. He said, well, I'll put that in. I don't know if it'll do any good. He put it in. And then next day, he comes in and looks, and the rats in one box that didn't get the medical treatment were dead. Rats in the next box got that medical treatment. They were running around. And he figured he'd look in that third box. He'd find the rats dead, but they were running around too. So now he couldn't understand. He wanted to repeat this. So what he did is he infected more rats, put them in boxes, and put drugs, sulfur drugs in some and no sulfur drugs in the other.
Okay.
Sure enough, he was able to prove to himself that sulfur drugs were a miracle that cured bedside fever. Now, this became real interesting because other doctors were looking at these kind of medical conclusions and see what they could find. Then along came a doctor, Fleury, and he serendipitously found penicillin. Now, how did he find that? As the book describes, he had these dishes that had the germs in them and whatever he was working on. And then it was a weekend, he had to go away for 4 days. He didn't clean off those dishes. When he came back, he noticed that there was a black ring around the edge of all these dishes. So he got on the microscope and looked, and there they were, dead. Dead germs. So through serendipity, he described this ability for them to eliminate the bad guys.
Yes.
He called it penicillin. He had a reason why he called it penicillin, but he called it penicillin. And sure enough, penicillin now started to be used around the world. Well, as the book writes, they do that and it works, they do that and it works, and maybe it's not working. No, it's not working. Essentially, they became immune to penicillin. So now they had to start looking for other things. Meanwhile, when I went to college, Jonathan Salk had come to University of Pittsburgh from University of Michigan, where he had helped discover a cure for flu. Well, when he came to Pittsburgh, he felt he knew how to cure polio. Essentially, he took monkeys.
Okay.
And the monkeys, he put the disease in them, and sure enough, at the end of their life, he took out the particles, and there was less of them. He put those in the other monkey. By going through three monkey stages, he ended up with something that actually had no germs in it. And he now decided this is a way to solve polio. Well, he tried, but nobody would accept what he was going to do. Well, finally, actually, the President of the United States picked a technical person to look into it, and they looked into it, and they said, we think what he's talking about might be right. So this evolved into a major situation where 168,000 of these, what do you want to call them, drugs would go around the different colleges in the United States, all around everything. And they were to use Salk's method of taking it and getting the monkeys, the ninth monkey using it. And University of Michigan was supposed to get the information in about a year from all these 168 doctors around the United States. Well, Salk went to that presentation finally, and he's sitting there with his wife. They were looking up, there was a big screen. They figured that somebody was going to flash this on the screen. Well, after I waited a while, out came the doctor from University of Michigan, and he says, I have reports from 168 medical places around the United States. And Salk is correct. They do not have polio. So it stopped everything right there. Here was the end of polio, basically. It went from like several hundred thousand cases a year to about 6 or 8 years later with 20 cases in the world.
It's just amazing.
And right now, you hardly hear about a case coming up with polio.
It's just an amazing story. It's just one of so many. If you're just joining us, just want to jump in there for a second. Our guest is John Durbin Husher. If you're thinking, I'd like to get a copy of this book and more of the story, Husher is H-U-S-H-E-R. The book is The Wonder of Life. You'll find it at barnesandnoble.com, litprime.com, the usual places. We'll have a link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. John, go back and pick up that story because that's such a significant moment, this polio that all of us in my age grew up with, so fearful of, we find out that it's been conquered.
So now the book writes about DNA and RNA, and essentially how they're different. They're both almost alike, except RNA has an oxygen in it, and DNA, the D stands for don't have oxygen. And they're studying this. They feel that DNA or an RNA or a combination of those hold the cure for medical problems. And they studied and studied. No matter what they did, they couldn't find a cure. Then an interesting thing happened. There's three engineers, one from the United States, one from Great Britain, one from Australia. And they were looking at how they could solve this problem. Is it DNA? Is it RNA? And they kept looking. Then, going back to their lab in England, it turns out there was a woman who had developed an excellent X-ray capability. And she had taken X-rays of cells with RNA and DNA and various things. But then she was going home for the weekend. She told her boss, "Do not show my X-rays to anybody." Well, it turns out these three guys worked for the same boss. And they asked him, "Hey, can we see some X-rays of this?" And he said, "Yeah, they're sheeted, so you can go look at them."
Wow.
Well, they go look. Within an hour, they knew how human beings are generated. They saw the double helix. A helix is when the DNA, if you look at it, it sort of curves around on itself, curve, 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 curve. And the DNA didn't do anything. It tried to find out. Well, here, all of a sudden, they saw a double DNA where the transcript of the one and then the other one was sort of wound right in around it. It turns out with that double helix, it described like a computer. You write a computer, you have a program written into a computer. And if you want something out of a computer, you keep sending signal, 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 and out comes this, out, whatever. This double helix is the computer in a human being. Every human being is born with a double helix. But they're all different.
Okay.
That double helix is like this computer being different from that computer being different from that computer. The double helix is internal computer for human beings. And what it does, it sends out signals to the lung, kidneys, etc., 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 all the parts of the human being. Turns out when I send out that signal, it's exactly like the other signal, but it goes to, let's say, the lungs where it's received and it now knows what to do relative to the lungs. So they keep following this and they decide this is the whole key. How do we find out how that double helix has all that information? Well, it took them a couple years, and how many steps they found in a double helix, one by one, by one, by one, by one, and how they get initiated, and how every human being is born with this helix, double helix. Different than anybody else's double helix, including the father and mother. Some of it will be like the father and some of it like the mother, but some of it's completely different. And that is that person, period, inside their body in that double helix. So this goes on now, knowing how life is generated by this internal computer that does its one, and then two, and then three, and then four. It goes through that to the whole body, and then eventually starts all over again. Ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum.
Yeah, yes. It's just
and,
what...
And so anyhow, now these technical people are translating RNA code into proteins and number of genes in the humans and conclusion on cells, DNA, and RNA. And that essentially gets you the human genome, and they write about that. And that is late news that you'll find in this book, The Human Genome. And then it goes from there to HIV and AIDS and whatever. Now, it turns out that how that double helix worked was it's waiting for a signal to come in. It comes in, bing, and it puts out what it's supposed to do next. Bing, out it goes. Well, it turns out that bing is RNA coming. Bing, just like you put a into a computer, a pulse, that goes in, goes in, goes in. And that's how the human genome works. The fundamental is that DNA is in the nucleus and it cannot get out. RNA is just like DNA but has oxygen in it. And it turns out that RNA is not in a helix form or anything. It can come in, just like a pulse going into a computer. So that is how life happens. That RNA signal goes bing, DNA puts out their next signal. RNA comes in, bing, DNA puts out the next composite signal into the place where it goes. And so this is how life keeps getting generated. Now, along came AIDS and HIV. Well, they couldn't figure out what the hell was happening. What's HIV and AIDS, etc.? They reviewed it, and they found that HIV takes the place of RNA, and it goes in to the nucleus. And now the DNA is written in by the AIDS or the HIV. So now the DNA takes next RNA, comes in, and it writes HIV into it. So this is how HIV and other medical problems get generated and go on and on and on.
It's a fascinating story, and boy, the time has gone by so quickly. That's why I will recommend you buy a copy of John's book, John Durbin Husher, H-U-S-H-E-R. The book is The Wonder of Life, Follow Man's Ignorance of the Secrets of Life to the Marvels of Today, DNA, Genetic Code, the Genome of Man. John went through briefly how all of this transpired, the evolution of all of this. It's all detailed so you can understand it, just like his presentation, our interview here. In his book, The Wonder of Life. John, it's been a pleasure having you on the program, writing so many books. Are you working on something, a new book now?
Yeah, I just wrote a memorandum in that there is a short book that is going to go into the New York Times.
Oh, fantastic.
Probably go on there in another week or so.
Well, we'll be watching for that. When you read John in the New York Times, you'll know that you heard of our conversation on the program, and his book, The Wonder of Life, is available at BarnesandNoble.com, for example, other book places, published by Lit Prime Solutions. Their website is litprime.com, and all this on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. John, the time has gone by too quickly. It's been a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us and explaining the book, The Wonder of Life. Thank you for being with us.
It's a wonder.
Yeah, it really is, John. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. All of the information on John's book available on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. We're back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.